Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Welcome back to Total Information AM. I'm Megan Lynch. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the public release of special counsel Jack Smith's report on investigations into Donald Trump. So what happens next? Well, it's time for our weekly conversation with KMOX legal analyst Brad Young, partner at Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Megan.
What are the traditional rules that would typically govern the release of information from a special counsel?
Well, under federal law, when you have a special counsel appointed to do an investigation like we had here with Jack Smith, federal law requires that before the special prosecutor stops or ends his investigation, he has to end with the completion and a publication of a report. In this instance, though, the Trump legal team has filed a motion to essentially quash the release of that report. And the legal basis is this. The argument is that in the Florida documents case, Judge Cannon ruled that the appointment of Jack Smith was invalid and violated federal law. So Trump's argument here is that if the special prosecutor's appointment was invalid and illegal, then the law that requires the release of his report is also no longer valid because the appointment itself was invalid. Now, here's the interesting legal twist. This motion to quash the release of the report was filed with Judge Cannon. But Judge Cannon really doesn't have any jurisdiction here because her case has already been appealed to the Federal Court of Appeals. So again, we've got this legal no man's land, as it were, because we don't know if that order from Judge Cannon is valid or if the Court of Appeals would even be bound by that order. So in all likelihood, this will have to be resolved at the Court of Appeals level.
That's what I was going to ask. What happens next and why was she even considering the matter?
Well, she was considering the matter, at least technically, because she was the trial judge in the documents case who found that the appointment of Jack Smith was invalid. But once a case, once an appeal of a decision is filed, the trial judge loses jurisdiction over that case. So in this instance, I don't see that Judge Cannon's order is all that binding, but certainly it's something that the Court of Appeals is going to have to take into consideration when the Court of Appeals decides whether or not the Jack Smith report can or cannot be released.
I'm curious if there would be any sanctions against her for stepping in on this.
Well, that certainly is a possibility. I mean, here you have a situation where a judge has issued an order where the judge technically does not have jurisdiction. But if you look at judges, the sanctions against judges, both on state and federal levels, are extremely rare. And in this instance, I would be rather surprised to see any type of sanctions because it's so rare.
Let's talk about a Missouri case now. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey is asking a federal judge to dismiss lawsuits against three Missouri senators. They falsely accused a Kansas man of involvement in that deadly shooting during the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl celebrations. They forwarded some social media posts. Why is the state attorney general getting involved in this at all?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, Megan, as you well know. And technically what happened was this individual was photographed in handcuffs and it was then distributed on social media as saying this person is the Kansas City shooter at the Kansas City Chiefs event. And it turns out he was not. It also, the post said he was an illegal alien, which he was not. So these three legislators who posted this, in this situation, the governor, Parson, had ordered that the attorney general represent them in this lawsuit because the focus of the lawsuit arose out of their legislative duties. Now, Andrew Bailey has argued that this is a legislative function. They were informing the public about issues dealing with illegal immigration, which impacts the state of Missouri. The fact that they were wrong about this gentleman from the attorney general's perspective doesn't change the fact that they were trying to inform the public about about issues dealing with illegal immigration. So they're asking for the lawsuit to be dismissed. But I think a more interesting argument here, I mean, that one certainly is more, I would say, salacious, but the more interesting legal argument is that under the Computer Decency Act, if you are a third-party poster of information that you obtain from someone else, you cannot be held liable for those posts. In this instance, all three of the Missouri legislators obtained that from social media on a third-party post. And so this would be an argument I don't think I've seen raised before about whether individuals can receive a liability shield under the Computer Decency Act. So there's multiple avenues that Andrew Bailey is arguing for this civil case to be dismissed.
So we're talking about Senator Denny Hoskins, who actually will be sworn in next week as Secretary of State, Senator Nick Schroer, and Senator Rick Broughton. So if these were everyday citizens, how would they be treated in this then?
Well, if they were everyday citizens, they would certainly not have any sort of a liability shield like legislators enjoy for activities that at least arguably arise out of their legislative duties. Now, if it were just a regular citizen, on the other hand, I think it would be difficult to prove any sort of a libel case in this case, because you'd have to show actual malice. And that's an actual malice standard is a very high standard to meet. And I'm not sure that that would make it in that type of an environment. But certainly having legislators as defendants in legal parlance is a lot sexier than just individuals.
Is this an ethics issue since they are public servants?
Well, you know, that is certainly an argument here about whether or not there's an ethics violation for falsely accusing someone of being, number one, an illegal alien, and number two, being a shooter in a situation where that person had nothing to do with it. However, again, according to the arguments from Andrew Bailey, this was, even though they were incorrect, it was arguably a legislative function because they were advising about the potential downfalls of illegal immigration. And at least for these gentlemen, it would certainly be a shield if proven in court.
Brad, we're going to move away from politics and we're going to move into tech. Apple has agreed to pay $95 million to settle a case claiming that the tech giant's voice-activated Siri assistant violated users' privacy. First, back us up. What were the allegations in this case?
Well, even before I get to the allegations, Megan, we've all experienced this idea that when we say some words, we think our phones are listening, and all of us have anecdotal evidence of that. In this instance, Apple was actually hiring third-party contractors to monitor things with Apple Siri. When someone would use the word Siri, it would start recording. They were using third-party contractors to listen to that and to use it, according to Apple, to improve their system functionality. The allegations are that information was being sold to third-party advertisers. We don't have any proof of that. But nevertheless, in order to resolve this lawsuit, and it's obvious why Apple would want to do that, because they don't want publicity about Apple Siri listening to our conversations, they've agreed to pay $95 million in a class action to resolve all issues related to this litigation.
Who does that money go to?
Well, Megan, if you've got an iPhone, it might go to you.
A buck at the Apple store.
Not all $95 million goes to Megan Lynch. But what happens is there is an estimate right at this point that if you can verify that you used Apple products that had Siri from 2014 until December of 2024, then each individual would be eligible for up to $20 per device, up to a maximum of $100. Now, of course, the question then becomes, how do you get the money? But the settlement has not yet been approved by the federal court. So that's anticipated to happen in February. And once that happens, there will be a website that will be created in order to process claims where people can file and request up to $20 per device, per device, up to a total of $100.
Beyond the payout, has Apple or will Apple make any changes because of this?
Well, they already have, Megan. And the reason they have is this is a public, this is really a public relations nightmare. You don't want there to be this allegation out there that your device is listening to people, because frankly, that just freaks people out. So they've already made changes. They've fired all of those third-party vendors that were in listening to these devices. And right now, according to Apple, they've deleted all recordings and will no longer save any recordings when it comes to what they hear through our Apple devices.
Brad, thank you so much. Always good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
That is KMOX legal analyst Brad Young, partner at Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young. We talk with him every Wednesday morning here on Total Information AM.